Baby, now you ready. Baby, now you ready.
Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. How are you doing, Jesse?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's playoff football, and Packers are rested up in division round. Let's get it. Divisional round.
Yes, that's what's approaching is the divisional round this weekend, coming off the wild card weekend. And we'll talk about those results. Specifically, I guess our guest here has a few teams whose eye he had on particular, whether it was the Cardinals or 49ers, managing editor for both teams at Full Press Coverage. We've had him on a couple times this season already, but always enjoy talking to Ryan Adverterata. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me again. It's been a while, but glad to be back on.
Like I said, talked to you twice this year. Packers did the NFC West tour, so they played both the 49ers and the Cardinals. The Packers, really, the two key wins, as part of all the wins they got this year to get to a 13-win season and get that coveted first-round bye. But now we are finally here to talk about a Packers playoff game happening this week, so exciting times here on the podcast. Playoffs, right? Like, what's happening? Oh, well, craziness around the NFL. So quickly, just to kind of recap the wild card games. Specifically, we're looking at the NFC side. Again, that's where the Packers are. I don't know that anyone was shocked by this, certainly the win result and also maybe the disparity. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as the 2 seed, beat the 7 seed Eagles. So no, Philadelphia is not traveling to Green Bay. That maybe would have been a nice story. But Buccaneers 31-15. Correct me if I'm wrong, it was 31-0, right? And then 15 points were literal garbage time?
Yeah.
Yeah, 15 points in the fourth quarter.
I mean, again, not shocking at all. Kudos to the Eagles for making it, because I don't know that anyone necessarily expected it. I think kudos to Jalen Hurts, because they didn't necessarily give him the full deck this year in terms of receiving weapons. It's kind of a bit of a shifting offensive line, some great pieces, but also some spots that are, some turnover the last couple of years. The secondary is always an issue. But in spite of all that, Jalen Hurts did lead this team to the playoffs. So I think he deserves some credit. We'll see how much the Eagles kind of reward him. Are they going to commit to him for the rest of his rookie contract? I know that's maybe more of a fantasy question than a Packers podcast question. But that's really all I kind of have to say. I think we expected this from the Bucks, and again, kudos to the Eagles for making the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be you talk fantasy, I talk draft. They have 3 first round picks, so it'll be interesting to see what they do to reload that team and what direction they go, because they got an older roster kind of turning over, but they got some talent there. It's just they can't get over the hump, so it'll be interesting to see where they go.
And then again, where Ryan really had his eyes on Monday night for sure, especially I guess everyone's eyes on that, like a national, I guess all these playoff games, particularly national, right? There's only one game on the slate. Nothing's ever overlapping, but primetime Monday night football for the playoffs, which I guess was a first. Unfortunately for Ryan and Cardinals fans everywhere, they lost to the Los Angeles Rams 34-11. So you don't have to dwell on this too long, Ryan, but what are some of your takeaways from that in Kyler Murray's playoff debut?
It was the worst possible, kind of the worst case happening. That was what happened yesterday. The team just looked, it's Jekyll and Hyde for this Cardinals team. And unfortunately, this time they just were on the wrong side.
And this does seem like kind of almost a far cry from the Cardinals team that specifically the Packers saw, where, frankly, no Davante Adams, to be fair, but still, right to the brink, literally down to the wire, and a Rasul Douglas interception at the very end of the game is what wins it for the Packers. Like, as close of margins as it could have come, the Cardinals could just as easily have scored a touchdown and won that game. And to see this game where it seemed like, it seemed like initially the defense was playing well to kind of hold the Rams in check, but once the offense started going for the Rams, it seems like the Cardinals were kind of out of it pretty quickly. So kind of a far cry from one extreme to the other in really just half a season.
Yeah, I mean, when you're just watching that game, I turned it on a little bit late, but it was already, 7-0, and then everything seemed okay until that Kyler Murray interception where you got to wonder what he's doing. I mean, you're in the end zone and you hold on to the ball and you get hit and you just, it was a toss where if I'm at the beach and I'm just playing with my nieces and nephews and we're just tossing a ball around in the water, that's what he did. And I think they said last night's broadcast, it was the shortest pick six in playoff history. After that, it was just Murray looked scared, and the Cardinals offense, you know, they blinked and they just, they were horrible. I mean, I will tell you this, the morning radio shows this morning were not very friendly to them. So it's going to be an interesting offseason in Arizona.
I'm sorry to bring this up, but does that mean the Cardinals have allowed both the shortest and longest pick sixes in playoff history?
That is actually that might be it. It's a weird thing in Arizona, you know, like since Cliff Kingsbury has been there, they've had three straight years where they've started off pretty well and they've stumbled down the stretch, and this is probably the worst that they've stumbled in. There's rumblings here in Arizona that maybe either Kingsbury needs to go or maybe Kyler isn't really the guy to lead the team, you know, in the future.
Yeah, I was going to hit on that too. You know, the NFL is kind of a, you take the season kind of like a game where it's quarters and you never want to peak too early. Like, you know, we can go back and talk about that early matchup. Those teams are totally different. You know, they went in different directions and it seems like that's the Cardinals' problem. You know, they come out really hot, really on fire. And then by December, like they're peaked. It's just like they peaked out, you know, they've shown all their cards and teams figure them out. And, you know, yeah, Murray looked like a rookie in that game. You know, I don't doubt his talent. I think he's really good, but he got rattled. But as a whole, I think that team just they gotta find an identity. You know, they have talent and they want to be high flying, but it just seems like they don't have an identity. So it'll be an interesting offseason for sure.
Brian, do you think Cliff Kingsbury's job is at all in question? I mean, you know, you get this success of finally getting to the playoffs, but with an exit like this, or do you think the fact that they made the playoffs kind of cements that he's got certainly at least 1 year left and maybe longer?
I mean, yeah, it's you know, but like when you see this, the team just struggles every year, and this is the same problem. You know, the first year I understood the defense was kind of spotty, but the last 2 years, the defense has been pretty on point, and it's been the offense, the thing that you really hired him for, that has just kind of fallen apart, and it's fallen apart in probably like the worst ways, and it's happened where the quarterback, the guy who you drafted number one overall a couple seasons ago, and he's the one that seems to be struggling when the big games, and there's talk that maybe Kyler Murray isn't a guy who can win big games. You know, everyone talks about him in high school football never losing a game, but I mean, I'm sorry, when you're in high school football, you typically have, you know, the better team, and when he's been in college and in the NFL so far, he just hasn't seemed to win the big games when, you know, the stakes are high.
Please keep coming back, Ryan. We love talking to you, so don't let all these horrible questions I'm asking you deter you from returning to the Full Press Packers pod, but I think the answer to this is clear, as much as we shouldn't overreact to this extreme, but in all seriousness, who played worse? Kyler Murray, or going back to the 2014 Cardinals that lost to a Panthers team that I believe had a losing record going to the playoffs, Ryan Lindley, which I believe was the least amount of yards, I think it was either yards thrown or total yards from an offense, maybe both. Who played worse, Lindley in 2014 or Murray a couple days ago, or I guess yesterday?
On paper, it's obviously Ryan Lindley. That's a name that I've been in Arizona basically since the beginning of the Bruce Arians era. And Ryan Lindley is kind of a name where if someone mentions it, you kind of cringe. But I mean, all things considered and how this team, this Cardinals team has looked this year, I'd say it's a bigger disappointment this year than it has been pretty much ever for Arizona, because even when you look at the year with Carson Palmer and I believe it was 2015 when they lost to Carolina in the NFC Championship game, you know, that was a Carolina team I think just lost one game in the regular season that year. So, you know, with this right here, you're looking at the Cardinals team where you had a lot of your guys back. Yeah, you didn't have, you know, Hopkins, but I mean, the entire offense just looked, there was no reason this offense should look that bad. And it looked really bad last night.
All right, so Ryan, we'll move over to the positives now. The San Francisco 49ers beating the Dallas Cowboys 23-17. So at least you've got something to cheer for and, you know, really relevant for us, because that does mean the 49ers will play the Packers in the divisional round. So what were your thoughts about that 49ers win?
It's going to sound bad, but I mean, I expected the win, to be honest. Out of all the first round matchups that the 49ers could have had, I'm heading into the, you know, the wild card weekend. I felt like this was probably the best one, primarily, and I'm sure we're going to get to it, because of Mike McCarthy being the opposing head coach. And also just with the way that the 49ers over the last, you know, 6 weeks basically had to just win these games. And realistically, one of the only stumbles they had over that that stretch was an away game against the AFC's number one team, the Tennessee Titans. And that game honestly should have been handily won by the 49ers. So this game was a lot closer than it really needed to be. I would have loved to have seen the 49ers punched in a few times in the first half instead of getting field goals. But I mean, overall, I mean, can't really complain. I grew up a 49er fan. So, you know, I grew up watching football really in the early 90s to mid 90s. So getting to see the 49ers and the Cowboys play again in the playoffs was already awesome. And then getting the win against the Cowboys, the first time that the 49ers had ever won a road playoff game in Dallas. So that was, you know, it was quite a bit of fun. And it's just, I think the ending just kind of made it, you know, just like that icing on the top there.
That is shocking to me that the 49ers never beat the Cowboys in Dallas in a playoff game. I guess, I don't know, maybe just Packers fans are spoiled, because it seems like it's a pretty easy stadium to win in from a Packers perspective.
Not in the 90s, it wasn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. To be fair, the Packers, when they started getting even good in the mid to late 90s, was starting kind of at the end of the 49ers and the Cowboys. But those 90s, I think they played three straight years, and it was just, I had a lot of heartbreak because of that. And so it was very cathartic to see them win this game, knowing that they were the underdog.
Well, yeah, and I think there was this period of time where those were the two best teams in the NFL. I think, you know, you think between you go to the 1988 season and I guess the 1995 season, there's an 8-year stretch there where those two teams combined for 6 Super Bowl wins. I think you've got the Giants and Washington. So those two, actually, I guess that's a lot of NFC East in there. Wow, imagine that. The NFC East is the best division in football. Imagine that. But yeah, but I think coming out of that stretch, the Packers went to back-to-back Super Bowls. So I don't know. I don't know if there's something significant there. You know, this 49ers Cowboys win, and coming out of that, the Packers kind of use that as a building block to their championships. But to continue on just with that Cowboys 49ers game, I'm curious to like everyone's reaction to the final play. I'll be honest. It's that's going to be one that I think is going to be talked about for a very long time. And obviously it didn't go right for the Cowboys, and who do you put blame on for that? So for anyone doesn't know, I think there was 13 seconds left, and the Cowboys were just on the 49ers side of midfield and decide to run a draw play, I think, to get closer into Hail Mary range, I suppose, better range. And get the draw, get the yards, clock it, and then have like a final second Hail Mary. And they just ran out of time and clocked it basically a second too late. They never got a chance to throw that Hail Mary. But before I go on my giant rant, which I'm sure, well, I'll try and keep it short. It's the Cowboys. Like their playoff run, I'll try and keep it short. But Jesse, what were your thoughts thinking that ending?
Totally 100% on the Cowboys. First of all, it wasn't going to be a Hail Mary. It wasn't even, they were like around the 30-yard line. Why do you run that play? Completely stupid play call. And then, yeah, that's the rules. The referee has to touch the ball to place it. You know, Matt LaFleur talked about it today. He's like, you know, we reiterated it, but, you know, that's why you run the ball to him so he can set it, because that clock won't go until he sets it. Well, you line up. He was literally trying to get there. So, it sucks to lose like that. Trust me. As a football fan, of course, well, maybe not all football fans. Maybe 49er fans were happy it ended like that. Of course, you know, I would like to see like one more play. Didn't want to see that. Well, I don't know. Whatever. But they just played that totally stupid. The Niners were giving up the sidelines, which that wasn't very smart either, all the way down. And then they cover the sidelines. So you're going to try to run a draw and not get out of bounds? Like, oh, man, like you're playing with fire here. Why didn't you just take two shots at the end zone then? Of course, I'm not an NFL coach, but I that's 100% on Dallas. I don't blame the refs or anybody else but the Cowboys.
So Ryan, your nerves must have been going crazy on that draw. Okay, you punt, and then suddenly, like, okay, first down, you know, barely any time's expired, they're at Miss Field. Like, what were you thinking at the time?
I was just kind of thinking, like, all right, well, just, you know, they're going to throw a pass short and then clock it real quick, get to like maybe the 40 to 35 yard line of San Francisco, and then they're going to throw it in the end zone. And for me, I obviously hate like thinking that kind of a thought, but you know, that was a thought process. And then once I saw Dak take off, I mean, I was watching the game, and as soon as he took off, I was like, I started yelling, like, what are you doing? Because, you know, there was no way he was going to get out of bounds. You like Jesse just said, they were basically like, if you were to pull up a pre-snap like vision, like view of the play or of the alignment for the 49er defense, they basically had like four or six guys just kind of like on the sideline each side to protect against any passes there. So they were willingly giving up the middle of the field, knowing, okay, if you get anything more than like 10 or 15 yards, you're going to put yourself in danger of not having the time. And the fact that he slid down maybe like 10 yards too late, and then the fact that no one seemed to know what to do and how to get the ball there. As a 49er fan, I loved it because of the fact that not just you get the win as a 49er fan, but it's just complete chaos. And the way that Dallas loses the game, you're just like, wow, there's like a comedy level to that. But yeah, it was just, it comes down to three guys. It comes down to Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator who allegedly calls all the plays. Mike McCarthy, who has a headset, probably hears everything that's being called. They didn't say anything. And then Dak Prescott, who just basically didn't do what he was supposed to do. And so those three guys shoulder the blame, however you want to give it to them, who gets more. I mean, that's just kind of like a personal preference. But yeah, they lost the game.
Yep, I agree.
Excellent points on both fronts. I agree with you, Ryan. Like, football's a team sport, and like it comes down to coaching and quarterback play kind of leading the way. Like, that's your offense, like, runs through, like, as you mentioned, those three individuals. So you kind of, no, like, all three of them have to share the blame. No one gets all of it entirely. You can't really absolve any of them, but it is interesting, like, you know, like, philosophically, where does the authority lie? Is it with Mike McCarthy as the head coach? Have you completely removed yourself and said, no, it's Kellen Moore's game, offensive play calling? Like, I'm not interfering at all. Is that kind of the offensive philosophy or organizational philosophy? I say, but at the end of the day, like, as a quarterback, Dak Prescott has the ability to audible out of that play, right? If he says that it just isn't feeling it, like thinking like this is not going to work, he can just say, no, we're just going to chuck it and try it again. Like, try to, like, Jesse, exactly to your point, 13 seconds, to me, that should be enough time to try two Hail Marys. And the odds of, again, Hail Mary, like a 35 to 40, maybe at most, like, it depends how far he has to drop back if there's pressure, maybe a 50-yard throw at most. You know, the odds aren't the greatest, but can you maximize those odds by throwing it twice? Now, maybe the first one gets picked and you never get to the second one, but I'll take that better than trying to think you can clock it in time to, like, that. Exactly. It just made no sense to me because I don't know that the extra 10 yards was going to make that play any easier. Like, it's still incredibly difficult to score a touchdown in the NFL at will when you need to, when the defense is trying to protect against exactly that. So I don't know. I say give yourself two chances and make that better. So, can Dak just say no? I'm not doing that. Forget that, Kellen Moore. Like, that's too cute. I'm just throwing this. Like, I don't know. Maybe Dak really doesn't have the authority to do that, and they would have yelled at him or something. I don't know. I feel as the quarterback, you can control the outcome of the game more than anyone else. So how does Dak not think about, like, clearly he bought in and thought it could work. They clearly have practiced it. I was impressed with how quickly they lined up. I got to say, that's something that they've clearly practiced, right? Like, this has clearly been designed. So then to me, it's almost not even, the mistake isn't even in the moment. The mistake is kind of, again, thinking that would change the odds of scoring a touchdown. I just don't get it. Maybe I'm just rambling because I'm still trying to search for an answer that I really don't understand. So, but I will say, if this was Kellen Moore's idea to call that play, and there's been a lot of people talking like, oh, you know, if the Cowboys lose, is McCarthy gone and they, you know, hire Kellen Moore, like they promote Kellen Moore. If this was Kellen Moore's play call, I think it's very clearly, there's a clear reason why Mike McCarthy is the head coach and not Kellen Moore. Because if that's his idea, that clearly was not a very good idea. Not well thought out at all. Not necessarily showing that he's deserving of a head coaching job, and everyone kind of wants to throw him up there just because he's a hotshot offensive play caller. But I think Like, it doesn't sound like McCarthy's getting fired. Obviously, the Cowboys are not going to move on from Dak Prescott. But if someone suffers from all this, to me, it might be Kellen Moore, because they might, you know, and you know, unless the team explicitly comes out, Mike McCarthy explicitly comes out and says, no, that's my fault. This is my idea. This is something we've designed from the get-go and to think it would work. So, like, blame me for that. Unless McCarthy comes out and says that explicitly, I think a lot of teams outwardly are maybe going to blame Kellen Moore for this. And I wonder if that's going to hurt his chances head coaching wise. Maybe it's one of those where he's the only chance he has at a head coaching job is in Dallas. Like, that's the only organization that's going to truly believe in him, and it's just to wait out McCarthy. But if he's going to make stupid decisions like this, it's going to be a long time before McCarthy gets fired. We saw how long the Cowboys held on to Jason Garrett. Like, you can't tell me Super Bowl winning head coach Mike McCarthy is going to get, I mean, what, Jason Garrett had what, 10 years with the Cowboys? Is that correct?
Something like that, yeah.
Like, they're not going to give McCarthy half the time of Garrett. Like, if McCarthy wants to this job for 6-7 years, he's probably going to keep it. And it's really going to become down to when does McCarthy want to call it quits more than Jerry Jones firing him, unless they go, like, they completely torpedo and miss the playoffs a couple years in a row. But, yeah, the Kellen Moore hype train is really cooled off, I think, is maybe the biggest consequence and takeaway from all this.
Yeah, well, I mean, we could go down a rabbit hole here, so I won't go much. But, you know, until Jerry Jones takes his teeth out of everything, you know, I think the coach is just kind of, you know, on a string there. But, yeah, it's going to be weird how they handle it, because McCarthy obviously was upset after the game. I don't think he said all the right things. Dak didn't say the right things. Nobody shouldered the blame. And stuff like that can really – really hurt you going forward. So I think they have a really talented roster. Like I said in our last week, I said I think they're a year away of really being a contender, because we both picked the Niners to win this game. I just think it was a bad matchup. Cowboys, I didn't think we're going to beat them.
Sorry, Jesse, but say Ryan, you weren't like cocky homer at all. Like, Jesse and I both on this podcast predicted the 49ers to win, so we were totally with you on that. Just to not come on here and say like, oh, you expected the win. Like, so did we.
Yep. Yeah, I just think they're the better team. You know, it just, they matched up, they're built for the playoffs. And I think Dallas, you know, is a little bit away. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here and how they, you know, you can either fold from this or you can get stronger. The way they act afterwards, I didn't see a stronger team. So it'll be interesting for sure.
Just like Jesse, you kind of just got me thinking like how it could destroy a team. I'm thinking like this could destroy a Super Bowl caliber team, right? Like this type of turmoil in a locker room and not necessarily believing in the coach or the quarterback or whatever. Like, think back to the Seahawks and how deciding not to run on the 1-yard line instead Russell Wilson on an interception. Instead of going back to back Super Bowls, they win the one and then you lose this other one in heartbreaking fashion. And then like they never recovered really. Like, it seemed like it signaled the end of like the Legion of Boom and everyone being united on that. And it like now the Seahawks are going to have to kind of go into kind of a bit of a rebuild / retool mode. So yeah, I mean, this is something that, you're right, this could have consequences maybe on the Cowboys as a whole. Maybe not just for Kellen Moore.
Yeah. I mean, football's a tough game. It's hard to win in the NFL. I know I beat that every week, but it's interesting.
Any other comments about all this, Ryan, for the Cowboys? We can talk about Cowboys misery as much as you want.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like, it's one of those, like a lot of people, like you just mentioned, the three of us basically picked the 49ers over the Cowboys basically because of the matchups. But when you think about the Cowboys, they, you know, was it like 12? I think they were an 11 or 12 win team. You know, they win the division. Granted, it's a very weak division. Say what you will about that. But they have a 4,000-yard quarterback. They have a 1,000-yard rusher. They have a 1,000-yard receiver. They have a defensive, basically a pass rusher with 10-plus sacks. They have a corner, or there was a, you know, secondary player who has 10 plus interceptions. There's no reason on paper they should have lost this game. Yet from the beginning through the end, they were just basically punched in the mouth, couldn't figure it out. And you look at the last, I want to say like the last quarter or so, realistically, the reasons why that they were so pressed against time was because they kept committing dumb penalties on defense to give the 49ers offense more first downs. I think there were like two or three plays in the fourth quarter, two or three holding penalties on the front seven of Dallas on run plays. And there, you look at the replay, there's no reason to do it. Just stuff like that, hands to the face, another first down. And then, you know, like you mentioned, both of you mentioned, you know, nobody took the blame. At the end of the day, you know, everyone basically just complained about the refs. Again, we talked about the refs didn't do anything wrong. It was, you made the mistake. But it's just, it doesn't seem like who are the leaders going forward? Is it Dak? Because if it's Dak, that was not what a leader does at the end of the game, especially in the press, the post-game press conference. You know, who are the veterans? Who are the leaders in the team moving forward? What are you going to do now with Ezekiel Elliott? Because there's a lot of money going to him, a lot of money going to Dak. You're going to have money, you know, more. You have money going to Cooper. You have money that's going to go to Lamb in a couple of years. You know, Parsons, Diggs, all of these guys, you have to figure this out because you could run the risk of doing pulling a Jason Garrett part two, where you have a very talented team, but you don't have anyone special enough on the roster that can hold everything together, and your coaching staff is okay. And that's it's a problem for the Cowboys. For the rest of the NFL, we'll probably enjoy watching that soap opera.
And I mean, I think Dak, I think has kind of really stepped up as a leader for a lot of different reasons. Talking about mental health issues as from an athlete standpoint and being very vocal about his own struggles, I think was not just a leader for football, but also is just in the Dallas community, and really the North American sports community in general, is kind of a really positive sign for someone that was thinking not just about himself, but how, the perception could affect others, and him coming out and speaking about mental health issues can help others feel better or more at peace or more willing to talk about it their own. And so I think he shined light on something very important, and to come back, a calendar year later and talk about the fans and we've sacrificed so much and the fans don't get kind of have the right to throw water bottles at us. And then as soon as he finds out it's the refs, like, oh yeah, cheering them on, encouraging them, like, that was just incredibly selfish and childish and not what the Dak Prescott we've known recently. And I don't know, I guess maybe this has been an entire calendar year of quarterbacks not necessarily being who we think they are either, but not to drag Dak down to that level. But it you guys are right. Like, it's showing a lack of maturity, a lack of accountability, and frankly, just a whole lack of leadership from everyone involved. So there you go, Cowboys.
Yeah, let's talk about some teams that are still playing now.
Well, I still want to focus on that 49ers-Cowboys game, because I think one thing that kind of came from that, Elijah Mitchell looked really good, first off, so in his playoff debut, and how the moment didn't seem too big for him. I think generally just how the 49ers run behind that offensive line, that the technique that Shanahan's kind of coached up everyone to kind of, like, the perfect execution on every play by the offensive line seems to just be a lot more common than it is not happening, where mistakes happen very rarely. And they showed how they could run from different dimensions, whether it's Elijah Mitchell or Deebo Samuel, that just having to account for him. I think that really, Micah Parsons, I think, is a great linebacker, but also showed he wasn't really 100% coming off this. I think he had a positive COVID test at some point recently. And so it seemed like, maybe lingering effects from that, not 100%. But going to the game, I thought this is something where the 49ers could really fool him, right? Like, he's going to be in on every play. So do you want to use that to your advantage? And he's going to be moved around so much. Is that something where you try and use that to your advantage and get him into positions away from the runner and try and just kind of play a chess match with Parsons to kind of throw so many different types of running? You can run inside, outside, with your receivers, with your tight ends, even. We didn't really see Kittle much involved at all in terms of having the ball in his hands. So he obviously was blocking a lot, but I just thought that was something where they could exploit and confuse. And I think it's going to be the same thing for the Packers. And I mean, they didn't see Elijah Mitchell, I believe, in the in week three. I think he got hurt week two. So they were a little bit handicapped there, because the 49ers run game has been excellent all year. I look at, of all the teams remaining, and I think situational football is important. Goal line, go-to-go situations in the red zone. Of the playoff teams remaining, the 49ers have the highest run percentage inside the red zone when it comes to, inside the 5-yard line with touchdowns. So 65% touchdown rate on carries inside the 5. The next highest team is the Titans at 52%. So, and then most teams are in the 40s of the playoff teams remaining. So, like, it's a wide margin, and that's really where, like, the 49ers could get the better of the Packers, specifically when it comes down. Now, I will say the Packers, as much as their red zone woes on defense, Jesse, we talked about, especially early in the season, how it was just awful. Inside the 5-yard line defensively, they've only allowed a touchdown on 37% of run plays and 42% of pass plays. Now the pass plays, that's kind of on par, higher allowed of the playoff teams remaining, but 37% on run plays, like that's pretty good. Compared to the 49ers, who have allowed a touchdown on 48% of run plays against them inside their own 5-yard line. So goal line defense, the Packers actually have the edge, which is strange to think, again, considering how bad they were in the red zone all year. So that'll in a sense be a strength on strength there because the 49ers have been so effective at it. Now, passing, it's funny because the strength on strength comes to the opposite, though. Packers, 50% touchdown rate inside the 5-yard line passing. But the 49ers have only allowed a touchdown on 20% of passing plays inside their own 5-yard line, which is the best in the NFL. By the way, not just among playoff teams remaining, but NFL total. But the 49ers are also pretty bad themselves. 20% touchdown rate inside the 5-yard line passing offensively. That's lowest in the NFL. So they're great defensively at it, but they're also awful offensively at it. Packers, 42% touchdown rate allowed. I already mentioned that. So it's interesting to where those, like, the Packers' strength will be throwing it and the 49ers' strength will be running it, but both those defenses are set up to, that's where the strength is. So, like, those situational, again, goal line situation defense offensively are going to be so key to this game. And I think, again, how the 49ers run that close, but also how the Packers pass and how they, specifically the 49ers, defend Adams, I think is going to be really key. So I think that might be where the game lies, is in those situational type of instances like that. And I do my goal line grades for fantasy football on Full Press Coverage, and the Packers graded out slightly better. And part of that is, though, their implied total, right? I'm using the last time I checked, they were at 26.5 projected total, 49ers at 21. So the 5.5-point spread for the Packers, which is probably about enough on each of the goal line grades to kind of sway the balance. So, like, these teams are pretty evenly matched. It's 74 rushing for the Packers, 72 for the 49ers, 61.5 for the Packers, 55.5 for the 49ers passing. Like, the goal line grades are really close, and I think that this game probably is closer than maybe that spread indicates, that 5.5-point spread. So that was a long spiel to kind of just say, like, again, it's going to be, you know, situational football details in the key in the red zones, I think, is, you know, who gets the touchdowns, who's forced to kick field goals, might just paint the story of who wins the game.
You said a lot there. Wow. You went in all directions. I like it. Yeah, it looks like the money, early money is going on Green Bay, because a lot of sites now went to 6 points. So I think it'll come back down, though. I guess we'll talk about the running first. Situational running is really what it is, because the whole season, if you look at it, Green Bay actually has a little higher average per carry than the Niners do, which is surprising, right? But if you look at lately it's the Debo effect, I really think. You know, Mitchell's a nice back, don't get me wrong, but it's the Debo effect for me, because you throw him in the mix, and the Niners, if you look at where they're running the ball and where they're successful, it's to the outside. Inside, you know, between the tackles, basically, they're one of the worst teams in the league on average. They run the ball a lot. But off left tackle, which you got all world out there, and out to the outsides, they're averaging 5 and 6 yards per attempt. So that is what scares me, because we've talked about this with our edge rushers not being disciplined and staying home. Well, this is a team you have to be disciplined and stay home and take away that edge and try to force that back inside, especially with this zone scheme. So that's the battle inside the battle for me in the run game. Ryan, I don't know if you have any opinions on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's honestly, it's going to come down to which team is able to run, you know, the most efficiently. The 49ers run defense has gotten remarkably better since the early part of the season. D'Amico Ryans has just done a great job. They moved Eric Armstead on the inside. You know, so they're moving him a lot more on the inside, not pushing him out as much anymore, playing outside defensive end. It comes down to you know, who can just move the ball when they need to. And you're right, Jesse, the fact that the Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers offense have been starting to use Debo Samuel in these different run sets has opened things up a lot, because, you know, you'll look at the game on Sunday, and Elijah Mitchell had, I believe it was like 96 yards in a touchdown. Debo had a touchdown, I think, and he had around like 50 or 60 yards rushing. And that play that got reversed into a fourth down from when it was like, it looked like it was gonna be a first down at the end of that Cowboys game, you know, that was kind of a little wrinkle that they had there, where It looked like it was going to be just a simple little like trap play to Mitchell. And then you basically had Deebo coming on like the end of round pretty much. So stuff like that, you know, getting the Packers to do that, because the Packers have a fast defense, but again, it's all about the eyes. And if they can get them moving, then you're going to open up those quick little runs on the inside that Elijah Mitchell was basically living on Sunday.
Right. 100%, you know, cause like in the motion stuff, you know, and we see that, you know, LaFleur, they're all from the same tree, right? Came from Shanahan and all that. And it's the motion to get you moving and thinking. Cause once you're reacting instead of just playing aggressive, that little 10th of a second can turn a 2 or 3 yard run to a seam that you hit and get explosive plays. So I agree 100% with the motion stuff and just the threat of going outside.
And Jesse, you're talking about like, you know, cut from the same cloth. I mean, the, you know, these guys have worked together. LaFleur specifically been part of Shanahan offenses before. I think for both teams, it's going to be key controlling the time possession. Who can tire out the other defense by relentlessly running as much as, you know, because I think, you know, I'm not arrogant enough to think that the Packers are going to win a track meet against the 49ers. I think that, you know, that's in the range of outcomes where this game is just like a sped up shootout. Like, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo can keep up with Aaron Rodgers. If it's you're having to go touchdown for touchdown, quick scores kind of back and forth, like, I don't think that's going to happen. But I also don't think the Packers are going to blow out the 49ers. I think if the Packers do win, it's going to be really close. And so to me, that is saying that this is going to have to be a trench warfare ground game. I think Packers-wise, I would expect to see a lot of A.J. Dillon. And maybe that's not going to be the case. Maybe they are just going to put this on Aaron Rodgers' arm. But just that pass rush for the 49ers. I know there's maybe some injuries. Nick Bosa left the playoff game with a concussion, I believe. You know, Fred Warner also got hurt. So we'll see how effective if those guys do play. I don't know if Ryan can maybe highlight that a little bit more if there's been any clarity at all. But you know, if they're limited at all, that'll obviously help the Packers. But still, I mean, those are really good players, and I think the best way to go about it might be just running straight at them. And I kind of maybe hinted at that before, that the divisional round, to me, it screamed a lot of teams where the Packers could maybe try to win the battle on the line of scrimmage and really try and you know, time of possession, long drives, run the ball really effectively and often against teams. And I thought maybe the teams where the Packers would have to, you know, kind of win more shootout, that'll come in the NFC Championship game, Super Bowl. And I think that this 49ers team, I think, is exactly that, a team where the Packers kind of really need to rely on Dillon, head down, up the gut. You know, you've got the, you drafted that rookie center, Josh Myers, let him, you know, your road grader animal kind of bully, let him do that against the 49ers front, which you know is going to want to be coming off, teeing off, and coming at so aggressively against the Packers. So push them back with the run game is kind of my thinking. When I'm usually the guy that, especially when you have Aaron Rodgers, just throw it 50 times. You got Aaron Rodgers, what's the worst that could happen? But this does seem like a game where you really don't want the defense getting tired at all. I think more than anything, even more for offense efficiency, I think just to protect this defense and really run the clock well, or really run the ball well and control the clock well.
I think the exact opposite. I think you use the passing game to set up the run in this game. This is Rodgers' redemption tour, right? Like, you wouldn't want it any other way. The Niners have beaten them in the playoffs every time. Let Aaron Rodgers go beat them, you know, and bring on the Bucks next week. We'll get to that. But, you know, like the first time, you know, now I'm not saying deep downfield passing, but the Packers know how to beat a two-shell defense. And just look up Devontae Adams' numbers against the Niners his last 7 games. One game's under 100. They're all over 130, and he scored touchdowns in every one. They can't stop him. It's a fact. You know, he has embarrassed the 49ers secondary. 49ers secondary, especially the corners, aren't their strength. Use our strength against their weakness, because their strength is their front 7. You know, you start loosening them up with quick passes. Like the first game, our line was beat up. You got Yosh Niemann out there, first NFL start. You know, this is an undrafted, you know, third-year player going up against Bosa. How do you help him out? You get the ball out. You don't hold on the ball. You hit your first read, you get it out, and you slow down this defense with quick passing, and then use that hammer and A.J. Dillon in the second half, you know, and really start trying to grind it out. But I honestly think Rodgers throws the ball 35, 40 times, but I've been wrong plenty of times.
Interesting. So philosophical differences in how to especially approach like the early first quarter offense. But yeah, Ryan, I don't know if you know any updates on Nick Bosa or Fred Warner or what you thought of like Jesse and I's ideas. Like what as a 49ers, from the 49ers perspective, what offensive philosophy would worry you more?
Well, first, let me kind of just start off. What the so far reports have been coming in is that both Nick Bosa and just for anyone who was watching on Sunday, it's Nick Bosa, not Joey Bosa, who had the concussion.
Did I say Joey?
No, it wasn't you. The CBS broadcast, I think they said Joey Bosa about three or four times.
Okay, good, because I do tend to confuse them and forget who is who. I thought I might have just done it there, but okay, all right, I'll accept that I'm doing well.
Yeah, with Bosa, it's obviously concussion protocol. From what like people have said, it's that he looks like he's on track. With Fred Warner, it was an ankle injury. Push came to shove, they might have been able to put him back into the game at the end. But I do think that both will probably play. I'm not sure how effective either one will be, especially, you know, Warner with the ankle injury. That's kind of a troublesome injury there. But I mean, realistically, when it comes down to it, it's if there's no Bosa, I still think the front seven is still going to be very solid. So if they want to do it, if the Packers want to try to, you know, drain the clock and do that, I mean, definitely. Yeah. Like it's going to be the quick passing because I honestly don't see the 49ers really trying to blitz a lot. I see them just trying to get home with their front four. You look at what they did last week against the Cowboys. I mean, you know, Dak was a lot of times just kind of backpedaling and running around because there wasn't a lot of time that was allotted for him, you know, in the pocket. And that was even after Nick Bosa basically went out early in the third quarter. So, you know, you're looking at the pass rush where you don't want, you know, big shot plays at the beginning. You want to just kind of spread the ball around, keep everything kind of short, and then just kind of drain some clock and force the 49ers defense to keep having to like shuttle in their defensive line players, keep shuttling them in. So you're just wearing them out. So by the time the fourth quarter comes around, third quarter comes around, you know, hopefully you're in the lead and you're just basically just playing keep away.
And the biggest thing for the Packers is you want to get up early on the Niners because the Niners, you keep them around, that's what they're built for. If they get behind and you take away some of their running attack and have to force Garoppolo to have to really start throwing the ball, they're in trouble. So we need to start quick because I don't want a close game late.
Well, look what sunk the Cowboys, right? I mean, I believe the 49ers had the ball to start the game, went down, scored a touchdown, right? So Dak Prescott, first time he touches the ball, they're already down 7-0. And that already telegraphs the defense can already know, okay, we could just get after him and rush the passer already. Like, I do wonder if the Cowboys were in the lead, if the pass rush would have been so effective, late especially.
The Niners didn't even see a third down that first drive. It was crazy.
Now, I want to circle back to, the 49ers run game with Elijah Mitchell. And I think he was not someone necessarily I touted. I went into the season still thinking that Jermichael Hasty was the best running back on this backfield. And, I mean, clearly it's Debo. But I think the one thing that really surprised me with Elijah Mitchell is in only 11 games, got 207 carries. And that has not been Kyle Shanahan's game at all with the 49ers. I remember going into the season, it was kind of a, again, back to fantasy, why I was telling people not to draft Trey Sermon, especially where he was going, which clearly was the right decision. That was never going to be a good pick. But the problem was, before this season, I remember looking it up, the most that any running back had ever gotten with the 49ers, actually, I don't know if Jesse knows, but I don't know, do you know, Ryan, before this season, who was the most, which running back had ever gotten the most carries under Shanahan with San Francisco, and how many carries it was?
I want to say it was, there's for some reason, I'm thinking Mostert, but I don't think I'm correct. And I think it was only around like 120 or something like that.
You're correct that it's not Mostert. I think that is right, that he had about a season where he had about 120 carries, but actually it was 152. I believe it's 2018. It was Matt Breida. And even then, like, that was, I'm pretty sure that was a year where they signed Jerick McKinnon. Like, there was other guys that were supposed to be the guy. Breida wasn't supposed to be the guy, and he still ended up getting 152 carries because they didn't have anyone else. And that was 152 carries in 14 games. And Elijah Mitchell to get 207 in 11 games shows, like, this seems like this is the running back that Shanahan has trusted the most and has been willing to give the ball to the most. So that's kind of a dangerous thing that, you know, even as a rookie, he showed it against the 49ers, against the Cowboys, didn't accumulate huge yards, but got the touchdown. And yeah, the Packers, I think that the biggest concern is Debo. But Elijah Mitchell's also, I think, going to be something they really need to watch out for. He's a good running back, and you know, Packers playoffs, 49ers, the name Raheem Mostert is not remembered very fondly, and just kind of showing what this 49ers offense is capable of doing. Because as good as Mostert is, he's a fast guy, like, Mitchell might be better. And maybe he doesn't have the vision or the instincts yet as a rookie, but like from a sheer athleticism and talent perspective, he might be the best that they've had, and certainly the guy that Kyle Shanahan's been willing to give the most opportunity to.
When you look at the running back situation getting into the season, you know, when they drafted Trey Sermon and Elijah Mitchell, the understanding was that it would likely be a backfield of Raheem Mostert. You're looking at probably Jamichael Hasty, because Jeff Wilson was still on IR at the time to start the season, and then maybe Trey Sermon, and then, you know, and then Mitchell. And then by the time preseason had ended, Mitchell had kind of firmly put himself into, you know, basically like the number two spot. And then you saw it week one, you know, he basically kind of got the carries because unfortunately Raheem Mostert got hurt. And once he went down, he was basically out for the whole year. And in week two, Mitchell was kind of the bell cow because I believe Hasty was kind of dealing with a nagging injury. Sermon finally got a carry, and he got a concussion, like his first carry of the game. So he's been the guy that's basically been there healthy for the most part. And the scary thing is the fact that, yeah, he had that, you know, he has those 200 plus carries. He had almost 1,000 yards rushing this year. He broke the franchise record for a rookie for rushing yards. And it was only basically, like you said, I think it was 11 games, 12 games, and that's it. And because he had a few weeks where he basically, they kept him out. He was a little injured. So realistically, he would have been a 1,000-yard rusher as a rookie, you know. And the one thing that he doesn't have when you're looking at him versus Raheem Mostert is he doesn't have Mostert speed. I mean, not a lot of people do. There's maybe just four or five guys in the entire league. But he's the more complete running back. He's the guy who has the durability. And you have a guy who like Debo coming in. Debo, no one ever really talks about his speed, but when you see him hit a hole and he accelerates, then you suddenly see that speed that is very, you know, just kind of misleading when you're not really paying attention. So I think right now the way that they're running the ball with the two of them is very good. If they can kind of just, again, if they can kind of just keep the ball moving, you know, and just kind of doing what they did, you know, Kyle Shanahan is gonna scheme up that first drive. If they can get the ball, if they get the ball first and they can just go down the field like they've kind of done a lot of this year, then that's going to be a huge boon. But the thing is, it's, you know, even if they're down, we saw that, you know, week 18, we saw against the Rams, we saw they were down 17-0 with basically just a minute or two left in the first half, and they didn't stop running the football. So if they can run their offense, and of course, you know, minimize the turnovers, then they're just going to stick around. And that's the scary thing, is you don't want your defense to have to try to stop them in late game situations when it's such a close game.
Now, the one thing I will say the Packers do kind of have is a not so secret weapon. Everyone knows he exists, obviously, but as a weapon against this run game is inside middle linebacker Devondre Campbell. And as the quarterback of this defense, and I know I've kind of I've made the like bold take, hot take argument that he's actually the Packers MVP this season, not Aaron Rodgers. I know Jesse thinks I'm crazy for saying that. I'm sure most people do. But I mean, this could be a game where he proves it, though. Like if he could be part of a defense and lead them to kind of to snuff things out and not allow any big runs. I think that's the thing, that the crippling, constantly getting the first downs on runs. I think that's the thing that the Packers really need to avoid. You know, okay, occasionally they'll break off a big run here or there, but it's the consistently doing it. That's what killed them. That's a Mostert got 200 rush yards in a game against them in the playoffs, right? It was just the constantly, every time he touched the ball, it seemed like he was getting a first down. I think Campbell can help calm that down and, again, leave this game to where the Packers aren't, you know, completely getting killed with the run. So that's it. And I mean, again, people clearly know about Devondre Campbell since he made first team All-Pro this year. Three Packers who did make the list. Aaron Rodgers beat out Tom Brady for the first team All-Pro, which I think speaks well to his chances of getting the MVP, since I'm pretty sure it's the same writers, the Associated Writers press, like that same group of people that vote for the MVP that vote for these All-Pros. So if they almost doubled up, or they more than doubled up Aaron Rodgers' votes over Brady, I would imagine Aaron Rodgers gets the MVP. Devontae Adams, unanimous, got all 50 votes as a first-team All-Pro. Two receivers, all-team All-Pro. Cooper Kupp as well, with the crazy Triple Crown season he had, leading the league in receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. So, makes sense. And then, Devondre Campbell, first-team All-Pro, actually finished third among a linebacker voting. No other Packers player got a vote except for Kenny Clark. He had two votes for the interior lineman, but still finished, fifth in voting. Aaron Donald, Cam Hayward, Chris Jones, and Jeffrey Simmons made the two All-Pro lists there. Former 49ers DeForest Buckner actually got more votes than Kenny Clark. And I do wonder if that's something. Maybe, Ryan, you could touch on this quickly before we end, but like, do you think that, like, the 49ers missed DeForest Buckner? I know that obviously they couldn't pay the massive contract the Colts paid, but do you think they miss him?
Yeah.
It's hard to say. You can't really say no because he's such a talent. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think he changes anything this year for the most part. Maybe early in the season when Kinlaw went down, that would probably be when you could point to and be like, well, if they had Buckner, then this. But it's just... right now with that defense, I mean, of course, having him around right now would be an even bigger benefit. But I mean, with what they have right now, what they saved so far, I can't really get upset about it. There's always going to be a subset of the 49er fan base that is always going to kind of look at that and say, why did we do that trade? Especially with the fact that Javon Kinlaw has been quite injury prone in his first 2 years in the league. But right now, I mean, you have DJ Jones, who is quietly having an amazing season and has been a huge piece along that defensive line to really, once he kind of came back healthy, that's kind of when the run defense started getting a lot more stout. And then now moving Eric Armstead inside and, you know, having guys like Arden Key and Charles Omenihu, who came over from the Texans midway through the season, those guys, you have that athleticism. So, I mean, the defensive line is the deepest it's been in a long time. And it's probably one of the best defensive lines that the 49ers have had. Probably, I'd say, even going back, probably even better than what they had during their Harbaugh years.
Wow. So, again, tough tasks. I think that no one's taking it lightly. Now, if you just to... Jesse, unless there's something else you want to talk about, I just want to just quickly touch on the AFC side of the bracket, quickly look at, just to quickly overview the results and maybe just talk about all the matchups coming up for divisional rounds. So were there any 49ers things you wanted to say?
Well, we didn't talk about our defense and who could be back too. We could have four stud pass rushers in this game. You know, you might get Merciless back. You might get Z back. You're going to have Gary. You're going to have Preston Smith. And Jair's probably going to play. So you have some first team all pros right there that are coming back for Green Bay that we haven't had either. So that's pretty big news.
And I think Jair is actually going to be the guy you kind of want, quote unquote, covering Debo. Because again, Debo's not really a traditional wide receiver ever, so it's tough to cover him traditionally. But especially if you leave Jair closer to the middle of the field, can you take him outside when Debo's out? I if he's healthy enough to kind of make those, I feel like he's maybe the guy you want, because he's a physical, I mean, he's not that tall, physical, stocky frame, a little bit like Debo, not quite to Debo's extent. That dude's got muscles, but like, I think Alexander's physical enough to kind of keep up and fast enough to also keep up and maybe prevent Debo from having these massive plays. So Alexander on Debo is maybe a combination we're going to want to see as much as possible. And I'm sure Shanahan's going to do everything he can to get Debo off of Alexander and get off that coverage and get into favorable spots. So that'll, again, be the part of the chess match.
Right. Yeah, big time. And, you know, the games that the Niners have lost this year, Jimmy Garoppolo is hit often. And I think every game was four or more sacks. You look at that Tennessee game and stuff like that. So, pass rush and Jair are going to be huge. Well, sell it on the run first. I know you kept bringing up 2019, and I was trying to mute you because that's a nightmare. But totally different scheme, hopefully different results.
So yeah, so it sets up a great divisional round weekend. Again, the Packers hosting the San Francisco 49ers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the Los Angeles Rams. And over at the AFC side, you've got the Tennessee Titans, who are the number one seed, hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. Good job for them to break the longest active drought of playoff wins in the NFL. So I think the Bengals had gone longer than my lifetime without winning a playoff game. So no longer, but again, face the Titans. And then last year's AFC Championship game rematch in the divisional round, the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Buffalo Bills. So all of that'll be great. And Ryan, for anyone who wants to follow along anything you're doing, why don't you let the people know where they can find and follow you?
Yeah, so definitely Twitter, at Ryan and Verberata, also at Full Press 49ers. Probably one of the best places to go ahead and kind of give us a follow. And of course, always on fullpresscoverage.com.
And of course, for us, you can follow us on Twitter at FPC_Packers. Also, your co-hosts individually, Jesse's at Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app, available for free on Android and iOS stores. Gives you access to all the content, so all the teams that Ryan's covering, 49ers, Cardinals, and every team in the NFL, all that Full Press Coverage content can be found on the Full Press Coverage app. So again, you can download that for free today. Also, shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at PA_IIOfficial. Let's just use the song Na You as our intro and outro music, so appreciate PA for that. Again, appreciate Ryan for stopping by. So thank you very much for always gracing us with your knowledge and your presence.
Yeah, thanks for coming, man.
No, my pleasure. It's always fun to talk about these teams. I'll be honest with you. There's a part of me that's very excited for this postseason because as a 49er fan who really grew up in the 90s and then being Dallas in Dallas. And then if they can go to Green Bay, beat Green Bay, and then go to Tampa Bay or something and then beat if that could happen, there's that little like destiny type feeling. But I'm excited. This should be a good weekend of games finally. I think all four games are going to be extraordinarily tight.
It does feel like the eight best teams in the NFL are all playing against each other.
Right, I agree.
We had two close games wildcard weekend and then four blowouts, so I guess Jesse's hoping for a Packers blowout. Jordan Love comes out for the fourth quarter and gets some playoff reps, maybe. But other than that, Jesse, any final thoughts for the listeners?
Yeah, this is why you play the game, right? You want the best challenges in front of you. It's time for Green Bay to exercise some demons. Go Pack, go!
Yes, and we'll be with you every step of the way for this very all-important playoff game here on the Full Press Packers Pod.